There's power in every purchase because every time we buy a Black-led brand, we make room for another Black-led brand. And y'all know I love my lip bar products. That's just one to name a few.
There is a whole collection of Black-led products that fit into your daily routine. Show Black founders some love, not just during Black History Month, but all year long.
That's right, y'all. Black founders and the products they bring to the table are creating a whole new world of choices at Walmart.
That's right. Go to walmart.com/blackandunlimited to discover all the amazing Black-owned products you can add to your daily routine.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
You know that feeling when you walk into your home, take a deep breath, and feel new? Well, that's what it's like to use Clorox Scentiva. Because Clorox Scentiva smells like coconut, cleans like Clorox, and feels like energy. It'll elevate any cleaning routine to not just clean, but also make every room smell like a tropical coconut getaway. Discover how Clorox Scentiva's powerful clean and refreshing scents can transform your space. Get yours in coconut or other fabulous scents at a nearby retail store.
Accountability is not an easy subject for a lot of people.
Why do I feel like a lot of people is Kadeem?
I ain't even say that.
See? That's the problem. Accountability or am I blaming myself?
Dead ass.
Hey, I'm Kadeem.
And I'm DeVal.
And we're the Ellises.
You may know us from posting funny videos with our boys.
And reading each other publicly as a form of therapy.
Wait, I make you need therapy?
Most days.
Wow.
Oh, and one more important thing to mention, we're married.
Yes, sir, we are. We created this podcast to open dialogue about some of life's most taboo topics.
Things most folks don't want to talk about.
Through the lens of a millennial married couple. Deadass is a term that we say every day. So when we say deadass, we're actually saying facts. 100. The truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. We about to take pillow talk to a whole new level.
Deadass starts right now.
I'm going to bring us back to a couple of weeks ago. All right? Kadeem and I have been very diligent about not getting COVID, not spreading COVID. Very, very diligent about this, right? We had visitors over. Long story short, someone brought COVID into the crib. They brought COVID. I was pissed. The first person to test positive for COVID was Jackson. And if you guys listen to us, you know Jackson is a very sensitive, empathetic child. So I take Jackson to the doctor. He tests positive. I test negative. So he finds out that he's the only one so far in the family that has COVID. Instantly, he's crying. you know, I can't believe I got COVID. Everybody's going to be mad at me. I got COVID. And I'm trying to talk him off the ledge because I'm like, you know, you 10. Things happen. That's what the time he was 9. So he's like, I just don't want to die. I don't. And he's worried about everything you see because he's been watching the news as well. People are dying of COVID. So he's just nervous. So I'm like, listen, no, you know, everything's going to be fine. He's like, mommy's going to be mad because now we can't go to Jamaica. We can't do this. We can't do that. And I'm like, hey, relax. Mommy's not going to be upset. Everybody's going to be fine. We invited somebody by the house. They had COVID. There was no reason for you to have it. So finally, he stops crying. We get to the house. We open the door. Kay goes, so I said, Jackson has COVID. The first thing that come out of Kay's mouth is, you see all them times I tell you stop putting your hands in your mouth and putting your hands in your eyes? Jackson immediately looks at me. You didn't say it like that?
No, I didn't, but go ahead. I'll let you finish your story.
No. Show them how you said it. Tell them how you said it.
I said when y'all first came in the door, oh my God, I wonder if it was the time I took him to the Coke factory because he was touching his eyes and his face a lot. And I was like, Jackson, do you remember when I was telling you stop touching your eyes and your face? I'm wondering if that was it. Because me,
that's how you said it.
I was trying to deduce. Yeah, I was. I was not yelling at him or berating him at that point. The berating happened when DeVal started yelling at me and then I was yelling at him. But go ahead.
Anyway, we walked in the house and Kadeen said, oh my God, Jackson, you have COVID. I wonder if it happened at the Coca-Cola factory. I'm so sorry, DeVal. My son. That's how she claims she said it.
Okay, whatever. Go ahead. Tell your story.
All right. So Jackson immediately looks at me and I see his eyes welling up. And I go in dad mode. I'm trying to protect my son. I'm like, yo, Jackson, go upstairs. Jackson goes upstairs. I get mad. I lose it. Okay? I lose it. I'm like, why would you instantly go to a place where he feels like he's the reason why he have it?
And also, too, I didn't know about the conversations they were having in the car prior to. So
exactly. She didn't know about that. Mm-hmm. So I'm losing it. I'm like, he's an empathetic kid. He's worried about dying. He thinks everyone's going to blame him. And the first thing you do is blame him for getting it, even though someone brought it into our house who was positive. Like, there's no reason to sit here and go over with him how he might have gotten it. Because we know someone who was positive came in the house and we all ended up getting it. So I start losing it. I'm screaming. I'm hollering. Screaming. And Kadeen is just like, yo, don't scream at me. And at this point, I'm like in dad mode trying to protect my son. And I'm acting crazy out of character, right? Me and Kadeen ended up going separate ways. She left in the car, was gone for 3-4 hours, came back. When she came back, I wanted to discuss with her how what we did wasn't good. And the minute I start talking, Kadeen gets pissed and is like, I'm not talking about this, and walks away. We end up having a conversation, I think a day later, and we solved it. Everything was fine. I hear Jackson 2 days later downstairs on his PlayStation, him and Cairo having a discussion. Then I hear him screaming at Cairo, just screaming. I say, Jackson, come upstairs. What makes you think it's okay for you to scream at your brother like that? And he didn't say nothing. I said, hello, I'm asking you a question. And he said, well, you screamed at mommy like that. And at that point, I had to be accountable.
Let's play the blame game.
I love you
more. Let's play the blame game for sure. Let's call out names.
I hate you.
More. Let's call out
names
for sure.
This podcast is about accountability.
Mm-hmm. Or lack thereof.
Knowing when you're wrong, to admit fault, or do you deflect? Mm-hmm. Like some people. Mm-hmm. In the story time, we talked about the approach to the door. Kadeen says,
Can I?
Go ahead.
Because normally with a story, it's like your side and my side. I feel like DeVal will be telling his stories and be like a little off sometimes. So prior to knowing what happened in the car, the conversation that he was having with Jackson and Jackson being like on the edge, when they got to the door, I was just surprised that Jackson tested positive first because Jackson had the least interaction with this person that was here, right?
Yes.
So for him to be positive first, I'm thinking now where everything that's going through my mind is like, where did I go wrong as a mom in, did I ever put him in an environment where he was unsafe, where he may have been exposed? So all these things are going through my head. And naturally, as a mom, I will say, women, I get a little bit more worked up off the bat, right? So when they get to the doorway, DeVal's just like, yeah, he's positive. And Jackson's like, Mom, I have COVID. And I'm just like, oh my God, I'm wondering if it's when I took you to the World of Coke. Because I said, remember, Jackson, you were touching that machine and I told you not to touch your eye. Like, I'm wondering if that's when it happened. And DeVal was just like, that's when he just blew it. So according to DeVal, he thinks that I was yelling at the top of my lungs. I was not yelling at the top of my lungs at that point. I was just like more frantic, if anything, trying to figure out why did my son test positive when everybody knows I was wearing a mask on the plane before COVID. That like, I'm the biggest germaphobe, and we've been so hypervigilant, and it just made me so annoyed in that moment because I was just like, why would he be the first one to test positive? I should have. Or like you should have. Like somebody who had more contact with the person should have. But the person was asymptomatic, so we didn't know.
I understand that. But here's where accountability comes in. Mm-hmm. Okay? Kadeen has been told by numerous family members that she snaps at people. Have you not?
Yes,
Your brother, your sister, your mom, mm-hmm. the kids, me, right? When I tell her that she raised her voice at Jackson, her first thing is say, no, I didn't. So many times she says, no, she doesn't, until someone else says, yeah, okay, you did snap. And she's like, well, I didn't realize. I'm telling you, you snapped at him, and you're sitting here telling me that you didn't.
Okay.
There's no accountability there.
I will be accountable. And I did say that. And I spoke to Jackson after the fact.
Okay.
And we had a whole discussion. I had a discussion with my son about how I may have reacted to it or how he may have received it. The thing is, in that moment, I don't know if he received it that way, but I think what amplified it was your reaction to me. And that just took things, I think, more over the edge.
I sat in the car with him. You think that, but I sat in the car with him for 30 minutes while he was sobbing, crying, thinking that he was going to die, Mimi was going to die,
and everybody's going
to
be mad.
So him feeling the brunt of you saying, remember when I told you not to put your hands in your mouth? He was in the car saying, people are going to be mad at me for COVID. Imagine you thinking that, me saying that that's not going to happen. And the first thing your mom brings up is the time she took you. And here's my thing. You keep saying, he always puts his hands in his mouth. So then who takes a 9-year-old to the Coca-Cola factory during a pandemic where you have to literally pull the mask down and drink? But then you putting it on him. There's no accountability there. It's not.
I hear what you're saying. And I did admit that was a fault on my part. What I'm saying was that I feel like things got escalated even more when you were irate and yelling at me at the top of my lungs. So at that point, it made it that much more of a situation where I could have just spoken to him directly as my son and had that.
I shouldn't have been screaming.
I shouldn't have took him out of the house. But also, too, I feel bad. Like, how am I going to be balancing life with my children? They've been locked up in a house for like over a year.
And this is my thing. So I agree with you.
Of course, in that moment, I felt badly. But hold on. You know what I mean? I'm then blaming myself. Like, how did I expose my child to this? No matter how much wipes I walked with, no matter how much hand sanitizer, Lysol spray. It was to the point where my friend who I went with laughed at me and she was like, oh my God, you're being that mom.
But Kadeen, this
and
is
I'm
the
like,
point.
I know.
But this is the point.
Because I'm
not,
scared to
it's
death.
It's not blame. You made a choice as a mom, right? Whatever happens from that choice happens. There's no blame. It's to me, that's why when it first happened and when they all got sick, I didn't say, well, you took them to the Coca-Cola factory, because there's no blame. You made a choice as a mom. You asked me what I thought, what I say. You want to go? Take them. There's no blame. If he gets COVID from there, he gets COVID. We got to deal with the consequences. There's no blame at that point.
I hear you.
But what I do think sometimes is you, and I don't want to say moms, but look to blame somebody or take on blame when there's no blame to go around. It's just what happens. Like, there's no blame.
Well,
we took him to the Coca-Cola factory. If he got it from there, I don't think he got it from here, because someone with COVID came to our house,
right,
and unbeknownst to
say.
Us.
I was like.
So my thing is, since we know that someone from COVID came to our house, it makes no even sense to go there. But to blame him or possibly blame yourself, it's no point in doing that.
Well, that's your logic. In that moment, I was frantic. Like you said, as a mom, I'm like, oh my God, what did I do wrong? I should have never took him out the house. And yes, chances are he probably didn't get it from there. He probably definitely got it because we had somebody with COVID in our house. So in my mind, I'm like thinking so many different things at once that I'm just like speaking. I'm like, what is it? What was it? Then I'm just looking to, you know what I mean?
That's
to blame
my point.
Myself.
And then you don't realize how loud you get sometimes.
Okay. All right. I feel like this went completely far left of what the topic was today.
No, because the topic is about accountability, but also proves that when you try to be accountable, people get uncomfortable being accountable. Like, for me personally, I shouldn't have been screaming that day. I shouldn't. I got emotional because I saw my son. I thought he was going to be hurt and affected emotionally, especially dealing with COVID. Then I started screaming, and I was screaming at you because you said what you said to him. So I was screaming. Should I have been screaming at that point? No, I shouldn't have been screaming. And I'm willing to say I screamed at you. I shouldn't. I was wrong. I apologize. When Jackson said to me, "You scream at mommy," I instantly said to him, "You know what? You're right. And I got to be better." The same way, you got to be better. I can't scream at your mother. You can't scream at your brother. So you got to check me and I got to check you. But that's me holding him accountable and holding my accountability myself. Mm-hmm. The problem with accountability for most people is the minute someone checked them on something they do, you know what they do? They get uncomfortable and deflect. And that's what the whole topic of it today is. You can't be uncomfortable and deflect accountability just because you're the one that has to be accountable. We all have to learn how to be accountable and accept and say, listen, I messed that up. Because we all human. Like, you're going to make mistakes. Nobody walks through here perfect. That goes for you and that goes for me. And if we continue to think that we can be perfect in any relationship, then we're going to continue to disappoint ourselves. Not doing that. Like, I'm going to make mistakes, especially when it comes to parenting or even communicating with you. Because I'm an emotional person. You know what I'm saying?
Really, DeVal?
A little bit.
Guess that.
A little bit. I'm a little emotional. A little bit.
Okay, Aries man.
Yes.
We got a lot of fire signs up in this house too. So that you being said,
and you be giving it, you be giving it as much as you think you get it.
Yep.
You be giving it.
Shoot, we have two Aries, two Sagittarius, and Cairo's the only Virgo.
Yes. And, and you're the only woman in the house other than Mimi. So the boys be like when you come at them, it's different than when I come at them. I feel like for them, it's like dad is going to be dad. Mm-hmm. But when you come at them, it's like hurt. Like, because I watch them when you talk to them.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Even when you're trying to be calm as a mom, you have a sternness.
Right.
That it like rocks them.
And I think also they have a bit of like they worry that they're going to disappoint. I think both of us.
Absolutely.
And they worry a lot about what we think, which I like that. I'm okay with that. But I have to know how to straddle the fence with it. I don't want them to fear me, but I also want them to have that respect and know that, man, I don't want to disappoint mom and dad. So.
Yeah. Which I think. Know? They need as kids, but they also need to learn how to be accountable.
Yeah.
Because look at the way we bring them up, right? Look at the way you and I were brought up. You, the firstborn daughter, but you a pageant girl. Your dad coddled you a lot. Well, he coddles all of y'all. Like, that's just...
Yeah, my dad's just mad easygoing, and he's like,
yeah, he's easygoing, whatever. You know, if something is wrong, he's going to try and make it easier or fix it or whatever. Your mom does not coddle you at all.
No.
Your mom is all about accountability.
All about it.
And you see the way
for us.
For you and your sister.
For my sister, yeah.
But not the same way with your brother.
Mm-hmm.
You look at my family, both my parents are accountable for me and my brother. Mm-hmm. When it comes to my sister, not so much.
Mm-hmm.
And I can see how we all approach life differently because based of the way we've been.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Accountable or not accountable.
Right, right. And they have made us who we are. Yeah. So accountability, let's dial it back for people. You know, I like to pull up definitions and whatnot. So thank you, Tribble, for pulling up a definition.
Tribble!
The definition of accountability, according to Webster.
Mm-hmm.
Webster, anybody still have a Webster dictionary? I got Jackson an actual dictionary set, like the book. It's like, look up the word if you're reading and you don't know it.
That's such a mother gift.
I know he can Google it.
Who gets a son a Webster's dictionary?
I definitely he definitely has it up in his room. Because I was like, that way it's less screen time. You don't have to look it up on Google. You can just open up your dictionary.
The funny thing
or your
is the way you gave it to him, as if it was like something great. Like, she's so Jackson, excited. Look, right? So he's excited, right? So he's just like, what's up? And she's just like, this is a dictionary. And Jackson's like.
And I was like, so it goes from A to Z.
Like mad excitement.
Because I was that kid back in the day. I was spelling bee champ. I was big on vocabulary. I still am to this day. So he gonna know some words. All right. Then SAT joints. Anywho. Accountability is the obligation or willingness to accept responsibility for one's action. Some call it cancel culture, which is a big thing now. But the fact is that you don't always need permission to be held accountable for your actions. And as we explore the different ways accountability can manifest itself in our lives, whether we're holding ourselves accountable for our own goals or we're holding our loved ones accountable for the harm that they've caused, or even as we fight to uphold the system accountable for systemic injustice, mm-hmm. we realize that the common thread is that accountability cannot be a one-time thing. It is an ongoing process that results in real, actual, sustainable, tangible change. And if we want to create a better world for generations to come, freaking be accountable, whether it feels good or not.
Can I be honest?
It's necessary. Sounds easy, right?
Can I be honest?
Be honest.
I think the world nowadays lacks accountability.
Absolutely.
I look at the way we raise kids, right?
But everybody gets a trophy.
Everybody gets a trophy. You're not allowed to punish kids even verbally.
Frustrating.
Or give them push-ups. Those type of punishments are now illegal mm-hmm. with sports. So kids are not held accountable.
Yep.
And teachers, they're trying to take away grades. Mm-hmm. Now, for some reason, in certain schools, you can't grade papers now. Mm-hmm. You can't write with a red pen.
Mm-hmm. I used to look forward to my 100%, my 95%,
says the person who get A's all the time.
See? You know, I used to look forward to that because that for me was just like, okay, I've held myself accountable by studying and there's my reward. There's like, it was a reward system.
But you know what's funny? You talked about cancel culture, right? Mm-hmm. We've pulled back on the accountability that we give to people, but then want to cancel them for making a mistake. Making one mistake. Make that make sense. Make it make sense. From the time they're young till adults, we don't want to hold them responsible for nothing. But then if we say that they do something wrong, that's it. How does anyone even learn accountability or redemption if we don't hold them accountable from young?
Well, I think we should bring somebody in to talk about it. What you think?
I think we should.
Somebody who understands and knows this.
We definitely will. But I want you to talk a little bit about your upbringing. Why you pause like
because
that?
Because I was like, where we going with this? Go ahead.
No, I want you to talk a little bit about your upbringing and how your upbringing has helped you or not helped you with accountability.
Well, I've said before in previous podcasts that I come from a family of not a lot of communication. Mm-hmm. When things, you know, you felt a certain kind of way or you were unhappy with something, it was kind of just like, oh, you just kind of deal with it. Or if you were unhappy with something your sibling did or your parent did, it's kind of just like, well, you know, sweep it under the rug and it'll go away. We call it the ostrich technique in my family, where we kind of just kind of duck and just like think that it'll eventually go away. So coming from that, and that environment that did not really encourage communication. And not to say we didn't encourage communication because we were silenced. It was just more like it just wasn't encouraged. It's just like, oh, that's how people are. That's how your mom is. That's how your dad is. That's how your brother or sister is. So that's just what it is.
Mm-hmm.
It was particularly difficult when I became, when we got into a relationship because you came from the opposite. So that being said, being able to open up, being able to be accountable. I've never had somebody approach me and say, Kadeen, I don't like the way you're doing X, Y, Z, whether it be a sibling or a parent. So I was used to kind of just existing in a space where I did
my best.
So
y'all didn't critique each other like that?
No. No, we just kind of did our best and we were just like, all right, well, you know, so hearing any feedback when we got together, you wanting to have those conversations, you wanting to say, well, Kadeen, you did this wrong. It then required me to then say, I did something wrong. Oh my God. But I thought I was doing my best. And
also, your mother critiqued you. She was just passive aggressive with her critique. She was never direct.
Yeah. Yeah. It was kind of like that, you know, and there was that, I don't want to say there wasn't any like real substance to those situations, but it was very sparse. It was kind of just like, you know, in passing, like, Kadeen, you should do this, or I think you should do that. And just me, you know, listening to my mom, I would try to say, okay, mom, I get it. You know, or just be like, oh, here's my mom being my mom. So not really taking it with any value. But at the same time, you know, then coming, meeting somebody who was so extra vocal, then it felt like I was then at a deficit all the time, or I felt like I was at, I was then inadequate in certain spaces because I'm like, wow, somebody's like critiquing me on how I'm existing, you know?
I feel you.
And
I was taken aback.
I was taken aback by it because I was like, wow, I felt like it was just you were being very nitpicky at certain points. I felt like, damn, I can't do anything right. It was a lot of me feeling like my ego was bruised because here I was thinking I was being a grand girlfriend or a grand wife mm-hmm. at that time, only for you to say like, nah, sis, you're not actually.
Mm-hmm.
So that was just particularly hard for me to swallow. And I felt like, you know, I was just being blamed for a lot of things. So for me, I think there's a very like thin line between how do you be accountable? Are you being blamed? And then do you get defensive? Because you always say I get defensive. And for me, it's just like, well, if I arrived at this particular destination, I'm not defending it. I'm just letting you know how I got there. And you hate that. So sometimes I don't even know how to exist in a debate or in an argument with you because I feel like, damn, if I can't tell you my mindset or how I got there, then what should I do? Just be accountable and just say, okay.
So now you see why we have arguments all the time. Because my background is completely different. In my household, we had family caucuses and family discussions where my parents sat us down and told us everything we was doing wrong all the time.
Never happened with me.
Your whole life, your parents never sat you down and said you're not doing this wrong?
I cannot recall my parents sitting down with like me, my brother, my sister.
Bro, this was like
early on growing up. Now we do that often, but early on, never happened.
This was like a weekly thing in my house. It was like every Friday or every time it's time to clean up something, my mother would come down and just read everybody the riot act. And then my father would, you know, you heard what your mother said. So I was used to, that's the type of communication I'm used to. I'm also used to having my, being able to express my opinion because my parents used to allow us to say our piece. So take that on top of the fact that I've been an athlete. I did martial arts for 5 years. Then I was playing basketball, then football, then college, then in the NFL, right? In those environments, they literally put you down in front of a TV and point out all of your mistakes. And you can't say anything. Like, they don't want to hear excuses. They just want to, this is what you did wrong. They don't want to hear why you did it. They just want you to correct it. That's become what I'm used to. I'm used to communicating with people like that. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm used to being able to be, because that, in my mind, made me the person I am today. Right. Like,
and it's lost you a lot of friends.
Yeah, it's lost me a lot of friends.
Your directness. Which a lot of people can't handle that if they're not accustomed to it. Not to say you were wrong.
Very true.
But it might have been in your delivery.
It did lose me a lot of friends. I will say that. But to be honest, I don't value friendships where I can't be transparent.
Agreed.
If our friendships are dependent upon me telling you what you want to hear, as opposed to me telling you something that's going to make you better, then we're not going to be friends because we're going to be moving in two different directions.
Right. But so, I said that to say some people are sensitive to the way things are delivered or the way they're put on the front street. You know what I mean?
I get it. And that's why Kadeen and I have like arguments. Or when you see us and we're talking about something, it can go left. Like the beginning of this podcast to her was going left because I was just pointing out what I saw was wrong. And then she felt like I was attacking her. Well, I was blaming her. When I'm like, I'm not blaming you. I'm just telling you what I saw. But if you felt like blame, I mean, it is what it is. Because in my mind, when I did something wrong on the football field, and I'll be honest, you could be running a route, and the coach will say, run a hitch. The hitch is supposed to be 7 yards. You turn around, catch the ball. You run your hitch, you turn around, the ball don't come. Coach say, what happened? You didn't get your depth. The depth is the yardage. And you're like, coach, I got my depth. You two arguing. This is happening to me. You and the coach arguing the field. He says, fine. Wait till we see it on film. Then you get to watch the film, and you see that you only went 5 yards. And now you feel like an asshole because you out there. Because
the valve's always right.
I've learned, though. That when you think you're right because you see things from your perspective, the eye in the sky don't lie. So when you get to see yourself from someone else's perspective and you're like, damn, I didn't even go 7 yards, you learn how to shut up and just take the criticism. And that's when it comes to us. When you want to point out something to me, I'll be like, all right, I got it. But then when I try to point out something for you, you want to give me all the reasons why you did it that way. And all I'm trying to say is, you giving me reasons why you did it that way don't change the fact that what you did hurt me. Mm-hmm. You understand what I'm saying? And to me, that's the accountability. You can give me 1,000 reasons why you did it that way, still hurt me. Mm-hmm. Do you plan on changing the way you did it because it hurt me? Or you just be like, I did it that way because, and then we're going to continue to do it that way because that's the way I do it. And right. I think that's,
and that's where we differ a lot.
Where we differ.
Because if you approach. Did something to hurt me, I want to know why. Like, what was your mindset there? Whereas you don't care about the mindset. You're just like, well, I'm hurt. So that's it. You know?
Well, no, but I'm going to change the behavior. If you say to me, DeVal.
Moving forward.
Yeah, moving forward. And that's always been my thing.
Yeah.
If you said to me, DeVal, you did XYZ, you know what I'm going to do? All right. You don't like that. I'm not going to give you a bunch of excuses and reasons why I did it. Clearly, you don't like that. Let me just see if I can maneuver to do it in a way where you find it accepting, mm-hmm. or we can meet on the same page. And that's just approach. That's your family traumas, my family traumas, your upbringing, mm-hmm. my upbringing. And to this day, we still have arguments.
That's a fact.
Because.
Can we bring in my expert now? Because you, this is like, man, this is a lot. So I feel like we need to talk to somebody though. Let's talk to somebody and see if they can give us some advice on this.
If that's what you want to do, baby. See how I go to the husband voice?
You was long-winded, y'all. This is going to be a long episode.
I was long-winded this one?
Yes, you were.
You wasn't talking?
Yes, you were.
You wasn't talking?
You was going in. Let me ask you, Kadeen, about... No, let's leave it to the therapist who we got on here today.
In the sky don't lie. Y'all go back and see who was talking. And then y'all let Kadeen know. Head over to the expert.
I've been trying to get to Delaina for mad long now. Delaina, I hope you still there, sis. You there, sis? All right. So today we brought Delaina Zimmerman on to help us understand what exactly is this thing called accountability and to help us better approach it in all aspects of our life and relationship. Yes. So Delaina Zimmerman, hello, Delaina. How are you?
Hi, I'm great. All right, thank you.
I'm gonna tell our people a little bit about you. So Delaina Zimmerman is a trauma recovery coach, a motivational speaker, and a licensed marriage and family therapist. She's also a television personality, best known for her psychotherapy cameos on VH1's Basketball Wives of LA. As a motivational speaker, Delaina brings more than 20 years of experience and tools engaging audiences locally, nationally, and internationally. You got quite the resume, Miss Thing.
Yes.
I like that.
Yes. So how are you today, first and foremost? How's everything been so far? 2021 shaping out all right for you so far?
It's good. It's challenged me to stretch and grow. I'm not always knowing what obstacles it is. I have to leap, and who does, right? What obstacles do you have to leap, right, in order to go to the next level? 2020 got me ready, but 2021, I'm moving now. I'm in action. So I'm excited.
That's great to hear. Delaina, I'm glad to have you on, because Kadeen and I have built a platform on being transparent with each other. And the one thing I've learned about being transparent with my wife in the public eye is how uncomfortable transparency between two peoples make the rest of the world. But I will have to say this, that Kadeen and I were able to become more transparent with each other when we started to understand each other's family dynamic, her nuclear family she grew up in, and my nuclear family and I grew up in. And I started to realize my flaws and the issues I've had with communication, because I thought the way that my family communicated was the only way someone can communicate. Can you talk a little bit about understanding your own personal family trauma and what you bring to a relationship when you don't deal with that trauma?
Oh, wow. That's a beautiful question. And I'm so glad you asked it. Many people get into relationships in the delusion that they're going to meet someone who's going to meet their needs and their emotional needs, you know, and nobody got out of their family system unscathed. No one did, you know, like everyone was has some residue of their experience with their parents or with the sibling system. And unless those things are addressed, then partners believe that the other partner is responsible to make them feel whole in the areas that they don't feel whole. And so it is a lie that really love songs told us this lie. They told us that, you know, you would need someone to meet all your needs. Disney told us that, but the work has to happen on the inside. And since we're talking about accountability, individuals are responsible for their individual healing. And so you can bring a whole self to a relationship, and then you can participate in the relationship, you know, with less danger, because everyone's looking for safety.
So I have a question. Mm-hmm. What is the easiest way? And I try to say easiest way, because a lot of people are taken back by our approach where we just pretty much tell each other how it is. What is the easiest way to tell our listeners to talk to their partner about dealing with their own family traumas before trying to come into a relationship? Because that was something, I would say the first 5 years of our marriage, we were like at odds, because she dealt with things her way and I dealt with things my way. She thought she was right. I thought I was right. And we both were wrong, you know, but it got to a point where we just like, you know what? F it. You know, I don't like the way you do this because you're family. And I started calling out her family. She started calling out my family, and it worked for us, but that don't work for everybody. So what's an easy way or a healthy way to speak to your partner about dealing with their family trauma?
First of all, you have to first admit that we're just humans. Nobody knows what they're doing. You know, we're raising, you guys are raising kids. Like every day is an experiment, right?
Yes.
Every single day is an experiment. And what happened last Tuesday is not going to happen this Tuesday. And so what I think is important in a relationship is to agree that we're just humans, right? And that it that takes the ego out of it. That I really don't, I've never done this before. I've never been this age before. I've never had these responsibilities before. I've never been this person before. And so to answer your question specifically, I think it's important for couples to understand that relationships need room, space for you to grow and develop and learn from your mistakes. And if we're in a relationship, that means that your real promise to me is that you're going to work it out with me while I make my mistakes in front of you, while I grow up in front of you, while I become in front of you. And if there ain't no room for that,
right,
the relationship ain't going to make
it. Yeah, you need space along with the grace to go with it. You know what I mean?
To me, it just sounds so cliche and simple.
Simple.
That when you say that, but then people always have retort to that. Oh, I ain't giving nobody grace. I'm not letting nobody cheat on me. I ain't letting nobody walk all over. I ain't letting nobody talk to me, oh how. And it's like no one's telling you to let anybody do anything. But giving someone grace, what exactly is giving someone healthy grace?
I think we should take it back to the first to the topic, which is accountability. Mm. And what is the difference, Delaina, between someone being blamed for something and then accountability?
Oh,
because I
one.
Think that's like where it
that's
starts. You know, you can't be held accountable until, like you said, you admit or you're aware. There's a self-awareness that there is something that's wrong per se or something that needs to be addressed.
True.
So how do we know when we're blaming someone versus just requesting that they take accountability?
So a lot of the family system comes with blame. I know that's how it is culturally. You know, the vase gets broke, who broke it, right? And then there has to be blame and punishment. So we come from a pattern of that, blame and punishment. Mm-hmm. I mean, if we just look at our history, it's just, that's what happens. Somebody has to take responsibility. There has to be justice per se in the relationship. I come from a stance, or I believe deeply that our problems, my problem, your problem begins and ends with you. So if you're cheating, we need to look at that. Like there's no way we can't look at that's something that needs to be resolved in you. I'm not responsible for your cheating. You're responsible for your cheating. If it's a deal breaker for me, if you're outside of the agreements of our relationship, then we need to look at the accountability to our agreements. So that's the difference between blaming and taking accountability. Relationships should have agreements. We should agree. What's the circumference of our relationship? What is included in our relationship? One of the agreements you have is transparency. So when you're outside of that, then you have to have accountability for what you've agreed to. But mostly people don't know to have agreements in relationships. They just get in pretending they know what to do. And hopefully the other person does too. And if you break what is a rule that everybody knows, or you break my family constitution or the sins that I hold against people, then I begin to blame you for how I feel. But you're not responsible for how I feel. I'm responsible for how I feel. Because I feel from the filter, from the perspective of my life. If I've been a victim all my life, then I'll be a victim in this relationship.
Wow.
So one thing that Kadeen and I struggle with till this day is, even outside of just our family units and our sibling structure, right? I was a Division I athlete and a professional athlete. They held you accountable by putting you in front of a camera and pointing out all of your flaws. So I became comfortable with that. So when I sit down to talk to Kay sometimes, that's the only way I know how to point out accountability is to say, babe, you did this wrong.
Right.
And for her, she feels like, well, you're
it's
always
like,
blaming me.
Or you're always like nitpicking, like there's a laundry list of things that he down is
right.
Like he's giving me specifics. Which specifics help? Because sometimes you'll just say, well, you don't do this. And then I'll retort with, well, when, you know, give me a specific scenario.
Right. So,
you know?
So my question is there a healthy and unhealthy way to hold your partner accountable? And what are some tools people can take home to say, you know what, I want to hold my partner accountable, but I don't want her or him to feel blamed. And I don't want to feel like I'm attacking them, you know?
Mm-hmm. So the point I made in the last question was about So if your partner's sensitive from their childhood experience, right? So in my relationship, I'm an only child and my partner comes from a family of seven. So he has tougher skin than I, right? So he says things in a way that make me feel uncomfortable. But the truth is, he doesn't make me feel anything. I bring that predisposition to sensitivity to the relationship. And he brings a tougher thing to the relationship. We're not making each other anything. That's how I process and experience conflict. That's how I process and experience, right? When someone brings me something that is a constructive criticism, right? So the relationship, again, has to have space for, honey, I'd like to talk to you about how we're handling the dishes. And then there can be a conversation about how we're handling the dishes. I need the spoons to be up, not down, because they get spots on them. And it seems like something minor, but you can say, the spoon is down again. Then I feel not good enough in the relationship because I've made an error. But I bring that to the relationship. That's not new to you. You don't place it in me. So you're not responsible for it. The point I'm trying to make is you're not responsible for it. You didn't put that in me. And when I feel it, I want you to stick your hand down my throat and turn the switch so I can stop feeling it.
Mm-hmm. That's not your responsibility.
Yes.
I'm going to tell you why that's so crystal clear to me, right? Sense. I've been trained and nurtured as a young man to not feel. You know, you fall, get up, don't cry. Being the first born in my family, my parents were always on me and I couldn't respond with an emotional response because that was not acceptable as a young man. Then being an athlete, they're going to tell you and curse you out, call you all sorts of names. Do not respond. Listen to what I'm saying. Be accountable and fix it. But as a young woman, Kadeem was raised differently. She was raised to, you know, be emotional and have emotional emotional clarity, or what's the word I'm thinking of, where you're allowed to have emotional responses and be aware of how you feel.
Right. Like that she's was encouraged. Always,
it was encouraged in her as a young lady.
Yeah.
So sometimes when I say things to her, I don't understand how she could feel a way about me saying something simple, because when it's said to me the same way, it doesn't make me feel that way.
Yeah,
and that's where we were struggling, because I literally was like, I don't understand how me saying this to you made you feel that way. When if you say the exact same thing to me, I'm able to process it and it doesn't hurt. But when you explain it that way, she comes with that. I come with this. So nobody made me feel like this. It makes sense.
But
it really does make sense.
Yeah, I totally get that. And it makes so much sense, Delaina. But at one point do we as adults stop leaning on or blaming how we were raised, generational traumas, things like that? At what point, like, of course, we know that makes us as a person, but at what point do we as an adult say, you know what, I understand that I was raised this way, or this is what I'm accustomed to, but then how do I break free of that because I know better? Do you see that people are able to easily do that or no?
No. it's important to know. You know, it's important to know, which means that you can take responsibility for yourself, right? And to practice something different, learning how to metabolize your emotions is being accountable, right? That's self-accountability. I have this emotion, I feel it in my stomach. And whenever I feel that feeling in my stomach, I act the same way I acted at 8 when I felt it in my stomach. I act the same way I acted at 12 when I feel that same feeling in my stomach, right? Like I have to take accountability for that. And so I don't have to blame my trauma, but I have to recognize that I've been shaped in a particular way. So if my childhood shaped me in a triangle, I can't expect to be a circle, if that makes sense. I'm a triangle and I have sharp edges. And so I need to honor that about myself and I need to make room. So if I feel triggered, right, I don't continue in the argument. We have agreements in our relationship, in our conflict, where I say, you know what, I'm feeling triggered, honey, give me a little bit. Let's step away from this conversation for a while, because I want to be responsible in the relationship. That's accountability, emotional responsibility.
Mm-hmm. See, that makes sense. But it makes me wonder, though, how do you raise your children to be emotionally intelligent so that they don't put themselves in the box of just being a triangle or a circle? Like, I feel like our
families... making them emotionally malleable to
others.
Right.
Is that even possible to raise your children?
Yeah, how?
I think so. You give your children language around feelings. Teach them how to say how they feel. Give them space to feel that it's safe. They need to feel safe with you. Mm-hmm. You have to be the safe place for them to emote. Like you said, you know, Kadeem, that you didn't have safety to emote. You were told it wasn't okay. So if you have sons, then it's important for them to know that it's not weak to say, you know, I'm afraid to before the game. It's okay to say I have jitters. It's okay to say that and still run and get you some touchdowns. But it's okay to say, you know, I'm concerned about my relationships at school. That they need to be able to say that to you, because I really believe that is the breaking down and development from age 5 to 12. That's where the inferiority complex is built in children. The inferiority / superiority complex is built in children. So if they don't have a safe place in relationships where they feel competent emotionally, that's where the trauma occurs developmentally, and it manifests itself in adult relationships.
Wow. That's so exactly what we're dealing
with Jackson.
I know. But I think we've been doing a great job, because Delana, we've been dealing with this. We have three boys. Our oldest, Jackson, who's 10. We've been dealing with this recently with him having like performance anxiety or little things like that. So DeVal has been trying to, and me as well, we've been trying to make sure that he's vocal about the way he feels and he doesn't bottle it up, because he's a total empath. He totally like takes people's emotions and everything on him. So in that, we want him to be expressive. So I think we've been trying to work on that with him.
I've been trying to find a balance
more than lately.
I've been spending a lot more time with him. Like, he and I do a lot more one-on-one stuff, and it's a thing where, you know, I can tell when he's getting nervous, and I say, bro, you nervous, right? And he'll be like, yeah. And I'm like, you know, that's okay. Like, it's okay to be nervous. I used to be nervous, and I see him light up, and he'll be like, okay, so I'm nervous, so what do? I say, the way you work through your nervousness is you continue practicing while nervous, and that muscle movement becomes muscle memory, and you'll be able to recall on it even when you're nervous, and you can still perform. And I've watched him, like, grow in doing that. But I also was fearful of being a crutch, and that if he doesn't have his dad before a game, will he learn how to do that on his own?
Yeah, the channel.
And, I've been trying to work on it a lot.
Yes, he will.
Okay, this gives me hope, because I you know, he's 10, so you don't want to put too much pressure on a 10-year-old. But I also want him to be great in anything. I don't care if it's sports. I don't care if it's acting or being a CEO. I just want him to be great, but also be emotionally intelligent. So when he deals with a woman and he's able to notice what she's going through and be able to be sensitive, but also aware. Respect his own boundaries and be aware, so that he's like, I don't have to take everything that comes with this. And that's what Kadeem and I have learned. Over the last 5 years, I've learned, I say this to Kadeem all the time when we argue, Delana, I say, you know, you live in an alternate universe. And she
and I always
hates,
say, and you love it here, DeVal, because you have many times to leave this universe on a whole spaceship out of here, but you here. So that being said,
exactly.
What
that
did
is
we
true.
Do?
That is true. That is true. But what you said made me realize that it doesn't matter what I say, how I say it, how loud I say it, how quiet I say it, she's going to receive it and feel the way she feels because of what she's been through. So I also can't get on myself about how she, I just have to learn and make a decision of whether I want to be here or not, which I do all the time. So.
And Delana, I think for me, one word you mentioned earlier on that rings true is the ego word. So in dealing with accountability, blaming, punishment, that whole system, leaving the ego out of it. And I think the harder part for me was the admittance. Is that a word? Me admitting that maybe there was a deficit. Maybe I did do something wrong. Maybe I was lacking something. And it was hard for me, because being a person who was always striving to just be perfect and to be liked, because I was also raised, you know, you want people to like you. You want people to, you know, enjoy your company. Oh. So in being like that, and having that ego, I had to learn how to put the ego aside to then say, okay, I can now get that accountability going and not be as defensive. He always was like, you're so defensive. You're so defensive. And he's like, why can't you just hold yourself accountable? And it sounds easy, but for me, it was me having to admit that there was a deficit somewhere there.
Yeah.
So for somebody who's like me that may not know how to put that ego aside, how do you think they should approach being able to be aware that they need to be accountable?
We have a responsibility in relationships period. Like, that's what makes them so hard, is that I have to take ownership of my role, my position in the relationship. Like, I have to. And that feeling of, it's really, I've named the feeling not being good enough, you know? From age 5 to 12 is where that inferiority complex is built. You hit that button. You touch that. And I hate that feeling of not feeling good enough. So I become defensive, or I become afraid that you won't love
me. You just described my wife to a T.
Yes.
Like, literally described
her
to a T.
And I can accept that in my old age. Okay.
So in the acceptance of it, right, what you said, in the acceptance of it, so every time it comes up, I know that's mine. I got to breathe through that. I feel the feeling. The feeling's not going to kill me. It never has. So I have to learn how to breathe and almost oxygenate those chemicals that have been released in my body that have that strong feeling in my stomach. I'm responsible for it. And then when I can get back to my logical mind, because I get hijacked by that feeling, it always hijacks me. So when I can get back to my logical mind, then I can say, thank you, honey, for pointing that out in me. I want to be the best wife I can be. And oh, I felt it in my stomach. You know, it's okay to say that, since you all are transparent with each other. You know, I felt that in my stomach, right? But I understand that I want to be this version in this marriage. I want to be this version. Thank you for not letting me stay in a weakness. That's accountability as well to each other, but from a place of love.
I love that one.
No, I love that too, because you've given me, I don't want to say a tool, but you've given me some awareness to see when I just need to stop saying what I'm saying and let her process what's going on, because it doesn't matter how I say it or what, because we've had arguments before where, you know, the old adage is, it's not what you say, it's how you say it. So I've tried that. I've tried to be, you know, quiet and be like, hey, babe, I just want to point out that. And then I get this big response back. And I'm like, I was just trying.
And to me, it almost comes across as if he's patronizing me. I'm like, why are you coming over to me whispering? I get you're trying to do this approach thing, but at the same time, it sounds like you're patronizing me.
But at least I know now, I'm aware to say, you know what? It doesn't matter how I say this.
Right.
It's going to hit her, because she's afraid of that accountability thing. So let me let her process that, and she can go through her way of processing it, and then come back when she's available. At least that gives me some ways to work on that.
But because, I think we both have grown out of whatever we were conditioned to an extent, you know, with our families and stuff like that. We're able to now know how to communicate as a couple, because I can't always blame how I was raised. I just kind of feel like that's me using a crutch at this point. Like, well, that's not the way I was raised. You know, me being at the point I am in my life with you, and us being this far into our relationship, we're going on almost 19 years, Delaina. So we've had to learn how to be emotionally malleable at this point with each other.
No, absolutely. But you know, Delaina, what I've heard from a lot of men and older men in my community, I've heard this a lot, is that women don't like to be accountable. Right. It's like they're just emotional. They don't think logically. Remember, you said get back to the logical mind. They don't think logically. Where I've actually found the opposite, especially in this day and age with women who've had to exist in corporate America. A lot more women are athletes now. I've actually found the opposite. But I have found that I find that in women who do exist in a corporate culture and who do exist in athletes, and women who don't typically are a little bit more fearful of accountability because they feel attacked. But I also understand where that comes from in the patriarchy. There's women who are held to a standard where you have to be this to be considered good enough to be a mate. And I get where that comes from. And my question is, as a man raising sons, right, how in this dating process, because we have a lot of listeners who date, and how do I teach my sons to be aware of those flaws or the things they find in women, or how to not only be malleable emotionally, but accept people in their flaws as dating? Because a lot of people nowadays, if you're not exactly what I want on the first or second date, they're moving on. But you can't build anything like that.
No.
You know what I'm saying? So how do I teach my sons to be aware of the stuff they're looking for, like emotionally in people?
I'll tell you what, you teach your sons every day. They won't do what you say. They're going to do what they see. I'm going to tell you that now. My mother used to say to me, "Don't do as I don't do as I do, do as I say." And it was impossible. I could only become what she was, right? Ooh. So I just want to say that. So we're talking about the family system. Remember, you are one. So your sons are going to treat women the way they see you treat your wife. And they're going to love women based on the relationship that they have with their mother. Now, I know we're in this drive-through world now, and everything's a swipe to the left, a swipe to the right. I get it. There's a reservoir of human beings now. You know, I got it. So
sometimes a very murky reservoir. But,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah. You know, it's very interesting how things have been kind of, I don't know, I don't like it. It's watered down, but I get it. Okay. So to answer your question, your sons, I feel deeply about what I'm about to say. I feel that young men are not taught the responsibility they have to be a man, just to have a penis.
I agree.
It's like a very, it's such a responsibility, because if you don't know the power that's in your hand, you won't treat it effectively. You won't be responsible with it. You'll weaponize yourself. And women suffer at the end of the irresponsible man. Now, I know we could say a whole lot about women, but understand, if the man is not in the home, the man is not in the home, right? And the mother is forced to try to raise a daughter and try to raise a son. But if the man is in the home, then we have a more balanced and intact experience. Does that make sense?
Makes sense.
Yes.
If the man is missing, and we know our history where the man is missing, okay, and you have an imbalance in the development of children, period. Okay, so think your son has to, your sons, like my children, know, my son knows that girls who didn't grow up in a particular environment or who present in a particular way potentially have this foundation. And you have to decide if that's what you want to invest in, or do you want to invest in something that's more principled? So I would encourage you to teach your sons to see women as humans and powerful and precious, and potentially your wife or your daughter. There are someone's daughter, you know what I mean? So that they're careful with them and that they see into the humanity of them and not just the exterior of them, right? You can teach them that their body's gonna change, right? That everything's gonna change. But if the inside of them, if they are lovable, right? If they are peaceful people, if they are willing to grow and change and evolve, that's the type of woman that you want to engage in. That's who you want to grow with. But if you don't take time to get to know that, then you are just looking for an exterior thing that is temporary and is going to change. I also want to add spiritual people who have a basis or a belief that they belong, right, to the bigger picture, to God, or to the creator, or to the universe, they evolve better. They evolve stronger. They have faith for the future. And you can build with that.
For sure.
Well, you know what I struggle with too is even we don't have a daughter yet. I was put out there that I'm pushing to one day have a fourth, have a fourth child and have a daughter. But I do struggle with how to raise a daughter in this world where, like you said, there is a purpose and the privilege of being a man and having a penis, right? But also understanding that men have been discarded in this current climate. Everything that you do that's masculine, even though you'll say be a man, everything a man does that's masculine, they call it toxic. So if you're raising a young girl, what type of person do you raise her to be as far as accepting a man in her life and understanding the privileges that men have, but also saying you also have to let a man be a man because men are needed in the homes. It's almost like messages are opposite. You know, we need men in the homes. We need men to be men. But then when a man tries to be a man, it's like everything you do that's masculine is toxic. So it's like where's the balance?
The
where's the happy medium? Because we even see it with Kadeen and I. We'll hear women will say all the time, you know, men need to pay the bills, protect, provide, da da da. So we had a podcast where I talked about what my responsibilities, and I said that I love to provide and protect. And some women took it as, oh, he's sexist. He does, because I said I don't want Kadeen to pay bills.
Right, or they took it as me being submissive
her being
to him.
Right.
And he was just like, I just thought that was my role. That's as a man.
As a man, like that's what I do as a man. But it's kind of difficult in this day and age to find these, you know, find where exactly what is toxic, what's not toxic when it comes to masculinity, what mm-hmm. is acceptable or not acceptable from a woman, you know, being with a man. So my question is, having a daughter, if we have a daughter, I'm praying on it, right?
Amen.
He's gunning for me, Delana.
I am,
Delana. I hear it.
As much responsibility as we have to put on men, right? What tips do you have for me in having a daughter?
Wow.
To raise a daughter that's, you know.
I know that this answer is going to be censored. I just want to say that now. But I'm going to be as honest as I can about this. I have a daughter. Okay. And she's 17. The definitions are changing. It right. seems like to me, like I am frustrated with it. And so you talked about that corporate America woman, right? She mm-hmm. has this psychological independence mm-hmm. and she really is a man. So
mm-hmm. I agree. I absolutely agree.
Yeah. And she gonna struggle in a relationship with a man, mm-hmm. period. Mm-hmm. Okay. So the idea about submission, and I had to learn this myself. Submission is submitting to myself as a woman. So that's what I teach to my daughter. You submit to yourself as a woman, but you have to understand what it is to be a woman and what your feminine energy is and what power is in that, and not give mm-hmm. it up and retard it for a role as a man. We're often in our masculine energy because mm-hmm. we're producing. I'm always producing. I'm working all day. I'm in the flow. I'm logical. I'm, you know, doing this all day.
Right.
When I'm with my man, I need to be in my feminine energy. I need to be soft, and I need to be kind, and I need to be nurturing. I need to be a place of peace. And so I have to understand that is what makes me so powerful, that I have the ability to be that, right? The safe place for him, as he has been in the world, being his black face and his powerful self, right? And his male energy. Where's his peace if it's not with me? If I'm not the holder of the hearts, I have to be the holder of the hearts. You have to hold all those hearts, all those men's hearts in your family. You have to be the holder of it. And that's the responsibility of a woman. I hear my daughter, she has a brother. So I hear her talking crazy to him, right? And so I say, after that, I come here and I say, babe, I need you to develop. I need you to break that habit. Where does she learn it? Where did I learn it?
Okay.
I asked my daughter to change and practice that tone of voice, like break that, because you are not going to be able to be effective in your relationship for the long haul with your husband. He can't respond effectively to that tone of voice.
You see that, and that's, I think, is what's triggering to women, especially existing in a patriarchy where they feel like they have to submit themselves to a man in order to exist. But to me, I think it's the contrary, because I think we as men have to be accountable to say your wife or the woman you're dating is not going to be able to respond if you approach her with a level of being insensitive or a level of condescension or feeling like you're superior. I feel like both have, and we talk about this all the time, being accountable for ourselves to serve each other. So it's not just about a woman serving a man. It's also about me as a man serving my woman. You know what I'm saying? And we hear it all the time. Anytime I post anything about serving my wife, men call me a simp. Anytime she posts mm-hmm. anything about serving me, women say she's too submissive.
That's but for the unconsciousness. Me, like, so it's just unconscious.
Right, exactly. My thing is, like you said, I want to be the place that he comes to decompress and to be, you know, being a black man, especially in this world today, and we're raising three black sons. I need to be that safe haven of peace for them to be able to let go of the entire world, you know?
If we're not that for each other, then what are we doing? Roommating and having sex? Like, otherwise, what is this?
But that's exactly what people think relationships are.
I know.
I'm never supposed to submit. She's never supposed to submit. Mm-hmm. I'm supposed to get everything I want from her. And I'm not supposed to sacrifice anything. She's supposed to do the same thing, and we're supposed to live happily ever after.
Absolutely.
When
not.
The married people who have been in successful marriages know that it's not possible. And then there's buzzwords that trigger people to be like, that's why I'll never be in a relationship, because I'm never gonna submit, or I'm never gonna sacrifice. Why I gotta sacrifice what I want to make him feel better? Why I gotta sacrifice what I want to make her feel better? That's what a relationship is. And it's being accountable.
Yeah.
Like me as a man, as one thing I will tell you, Delana, I had to learn to be accountable to myself, to stop being selfish, stop with my ego, and listen. I had to learn that. And I had to learn to accept that people are going to view me as less than a masculine man because I'm working to serve my wife. And I, to be honest, my relationship, and I got happier when I did that. I was accountable to knew what it was going to be, because at this point, I'm not serving all the other people in my marriage. I'm not serving what their expectations are of me. I'm serving this woman.
Absolutely. And for me, it was a lot of unlearning of things that I thought needed to exist in a relationship, thought needed to happen in a relationship, looking at relationships around me and saying, oh, yeah, I don't want to be like them, or ugh, them over there, not so much. I had to unlearn a lot to then be able to be more tuned into my husband and just realize, like, at the end of the day, we have to lay next to each other at night. Forget what everybody else says. Like, literally had to come down to it for us to then say, you know, we got this.
Delana, wow, you're dope, Delana, because I've learned some things today.
Oh,
especially,
I did too.
I've learned, you know, at least how we communicate, and also understanding that it's not what I say or how I say. It's understanding how she's going to receive it regardless of what the message is. That's one thing I have never thought about until today.
Yeah.
So thank you, Delana. Like,
yes,
thank
it was
you.
Such a pleasure chatting with you. I feel like we should have you back on a future episode. I'm sure there's so many other things based on your resume and things that we've scratched the surface with you that we can always talk about some more. So we'd love to have you back. Thank you so much for your time today.
Well, tell everybody where they can find you, your Instagram, Facebook, Twitter.
Yeah, websites, all websites. That.
My Instagram is at Delana Zimmerman Therapy. And I have a website also where you can look at my services, DelanaZimmermanTherapy.com.
Hey, what's good, y'all? I think it's important for you to understand why Black representation in media is important. It's important because the media represents how people view us. And it's important that they understand that Black people are not a monolithic people.
That is a fact. And the next generation of influential Black voices can be found on NPR's new collection, Black Stories, Black Truths.
Black Stories, Black Truths is a celebration of Blackness from NPR. Each of NPR's Black voices are as distinct, varied, and nuanced as the Black experience itself. Every episode is a living account about what it means to be Black today, told from a unique Black perspective. From Bobby Shmurda to The Wire, Michelle Obama to reparations, there's no limit to the range of Black stories, Black truths.
Black perspectives haven't always been centered in the telling of America's story. Now they are the story.
In NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, you'll find a collection of some of NPR's best podcast episodes celebrating the Black experience.
Listen now to Black Stories, Black Truths from NPR, wherever you get your podcasts. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Y'all, let me tell you, after the Love Against the World tour, my social battery is depleted, drained, no energy. How do you feel, babe?
I don't know. You know, it can be easy for people to ignore their social battery and spread themselves thin, especially with social gatherings picking up one after another in the wintertime.
That's a fact. What's the right amount of socializing for you? And how do you recharge after that? Maybe you thrive around people. Or maybe you need some more alone time like me.
You know what? Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery.
So if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and you can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge.
Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/deadass today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/deadass. During the break, let's quickly talk about a couple things that are important to most people I know. Comfort and style. Crocs, classic clogs, and sandals have both covered.
When I'm talking about style, I mean personal style.
There are just so many colors and so many Jibbitz charms that you can add to the Crocs to make them unique. You can dress up your Crocs to match your mood, to match your personality, to fit the occasion, and you can change them up day to day.
I mean, ultimately, you can stand out from the crowd in a way that only you can because it's your personal style. And now, let's talk about comfort. You know, it doesn't get better than Crocs, clogs, and sandals when it comes to being comfortable. Style and comfort are usually a trade-off, but here, they're a package deal. It's like you have cushions on your feet. Soft, stylish, personalized, colorful cushions.
That's right. So why wait? Head over to Crocs.com today and experience the comfort and style of Crocs classic clogs and sandals for yourself. Your feet will thank you. There's power in every purchase because every time we buy a Black-led brand, we make room for another Black-led brand. And y'all know I love my lip bar products. That's just one to name a few.
There is a whole collection of Black-led products that fit into your daily routine. Show Black founders some love, not just during Black History Month, but all year long.
That's right, y'all. Black founders and the products they bring to the table are creating a whole new world of choices at Walmart.
That's right. Go to walmart.com/blackandunlimited to discover all the amazing Black-owned products you can add to your daily routine.
All right, so we decided to keep Delana around for our listener letter segment because, you know, I like to be nosy and be in all y'all business. But I figured once we have an expert in the house today, we might as well lean on her expertise and see if she can give us some coins, some gems right now, okay? So I'm going to go ahead and read the first one, Delana, for you.
Okay.
And this is from a listener that says, I'm a huge fan of both of you and you guys are truly an inspiration. Thank you. I'm writing you guys for advice. Even if you don't mention it on your podcast, I would just love to have your honest feedback. I've been with my boyfriend going on 8 years. We have a 4-year-old daughter. I just recently found out my boyfriend has been cheating on me for 2 years with a girl from his job. He never told me. She did when he finally decided to end things with her. He stated that there was reasons for him cheating, such as the lack of sex, me not cooking as much, not asking him how his day was, and simply just showing concern. At that time, we had just moved into an apartment together. Our daughter was one, and I was trying to balance everything. Most importantly, he wasn't helping me around the house, giving me the attention or companionship. I felt like things were being forced. I have never cheated on this man, and I'm truly heartbroken from this situation. He told me pieces of the story, but I feel like he doesn't want to tell me everything. Even though I asked him to tell me the whole truth, just to assist in my healing process, what advice can you guys give me on moving forward?
Ooh.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That work love is something else.
we get listener letters like this all the time, Delana. It's like it's like the same story in every relationship.
Mm-hmm. So if we listen to the story, and it fits right into the things that we've talked about today, and it's that neither one of them knew their responsibility in the relationship, even though they had been in the relationship and were making babies, right? So she was overwhelmed, and he wasn't supportive. That's, you know, the way she presents it. What I want to talk about in infidelity is that it is not her fault that he had this relationship with the other woman. It is how he works out his insecurity, his inferiority complex within himself. So it's okay to not feel that you're getting what you need in a relationship. That's fine. But to work that out outside of the relationship where you can get validation is his problem. It is not an indication of her not being good enough in the relationship. It's him not feeling good enough. So him seeking outside of himself, him being out of integrity, out of character, out of his promise, right? Out of his commitment. That is something that he has to work out. I'm sure in the past, sex and attention has made him feel whole. That's why we have to be accountable for our own healing and our own wholeness, right? And our own self-actualization so that we don't have to get it from other people, not even our partners, right? We have to give it to ourselves and then, again, participate in the relationship with a healed or whole self or working on wholeness self. And so how she moves forward is she continues, if she's going to stay in the relationship, he has to do his work. Like if she's going to say, well, he has to maybe talk to a therapist about his need for validation and how he has sought it out in the past and how he is going to curb that currently. And if she's going to stay in a relationship, she has to take care of herself, just to love herself, develop a self-love practice so that she can look in the mirror and be in integrity with herself. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes sense. Yeah, it makes sense. Yeah. And a lot of times with these scenarios, it's always the same thing. These two people, like you said, got into a relationship and there was no complete contract on what was decided on who was going to provide what or who was going to do what for whom. Mm-hmm. One person starts to lack because they feel overwhelmed, so they stop doing something.
Yep.
The other one stops doing. Then they're no longer intimate with each other. Yeah. And then one person seeks outside forces to feel as if they want to, you know, they can feel whole again.
Yeah.
And to be honest, when we look at these, it's not always a man and woman thing.
Yeah, sometimes it's been, vice versa.
It's vice versa. Sometimes, like I've had a homeboy, I'm not going to out him at all, but his wife cheated on him. And he was just like, bro, you know what I'm saying? I provide, I do this, I do that. I go in and out of the house. I make sure we have everything. And she stepped out. And I said to him, being a man is accountable. I said, what were you not doing that she felt she had to step out?
Right.
And he was like, what do you mean? I provide, I do this. I said, okay, when's the last time you hugged your wife? When's the last time you've kissed your wife? When's the last time you've asked her what she wants to do and took her to do something she wants to do? And he was like, I was too busy trying to do all these other things. I said, yeah, you were doing all these other things that you wanted to do to feel like you were a man in the house and not doing anything that she needed. And she stepped out. Is she wrong for stepping out? Absolutely. And she stepped out for the exact reasons you said.
Mm-hmm.
She felt like she wanted to feel like someone wanted validation her again. She needed validation. Yeah. She thought, and then she admitted to him, I thought you were cheating, so I cheated.
You know what's powerful about it? You could step out or you could step in.
I like that.
Of just existing and allowing things to happen.
I like that.
Leaning into the relationship.
That's right. Lean into it. This is what I need. This is what I'm hoping for. Can we make some agreements? Can we create a structure? Is the relationship more important than my individual concerns? If my individual concerns become more important than the unity of the universe of the relationship, I'm going to do what the hell I want to do. But if I remember that the relationship is important, more important than my individual need in the moment, because it's temporary, right?
Right.
Then I will lean into the relationship and then I will be able to be influenced by you and I will be open, right? Hopefully you will be open to be influenced by me.
She said, you can step out or you can lean in. I like that. You can step out and step in because that's... Yeah. That's literally what me and Kadeem decided to do because we both had our transgressions. And at that point, it was like, okay, are we going to go out this way or am I going to focus more on this person right here?
Exactly.
And ever since we decided to do that, things have been like,
it's been up.
Wow, that's true. We don't even have time for another listener letter.
Right.
But I honestly feel like the second listener letter would probably be the same thing.
Similar situation.
What your points were so small. You were going to say something? Go ahead, Delana.
I was thinking about something in that letter that she asked. Go ahead. I don't know. Can you see, Kadeem, what...
She asked, was it a question she asked?
Or was it him describing what was wrong?
Oh,
why
she
he
had
it?
Wanted him to give details about everything that
happened. Yes, that's it. She don't need the details. It's none of her business. It's irrelevant.
I think people need to hear that too.
Because hearing the details is torture.
They're a glutton for punishment and they're looking for the points where they were not good enough. Remember, everybody's inferiority complex was built between age 5 and 12. So she's looking for the details of where she's not good enough because she thinks it's her fault that he did it.
So she feels like if he tells the details, it's like, oh, she did that. Shoot, I wasn't doing that. So there was a deficit there.
No, the deficit was in him.
That's important too. Like you can hold your partner accountable without having to punish them with all the details. Like to be honest, like you don't have to say, well, you weren't doing all of this. That's why I did this. No, let's hold ourselves accountable. Yes, I stepped out or yes, you stepped out. How do we get to that point?
Mm.
Because it's never a one person thing. It's always a collective thing for people
Absolutely.
To get
Absolutely.
To a point.
Yeah. A collective series of events.
Yeah.
It's two people.
And, yes.
Yeah. It's always collective, and really, each other are feeding off of each other's inferiority and insecurity. I have to develop security in myself. I have to be a safe person emotionally. And then I can be a safe person physically in the relationship. I can come to you when I, you know, when I don't feel like we're in our roles. I can come to you when I feel disconnected from you, as opposed to finding connection in other places.
She said,
"That just
no." She said,
"So nicely,
people are constantly
moment
feeding
of truth from Delaina.
Of each, yes, people are constantly feeding off of each other's insecurities."
Mm-hmm.
And looking to feed their own insecurities. And the minute their insecurity isn't fed, they just go elsewhere.
Right.
That seems like the dating process.
Yeah, nowadays. Yeah.
That seems like the dating process. Yeah. I'm insecure about this. Let me find someone who's going to feed that aspect of me. And the minute they don't, I'm gone.
Mm-hmm.
But no one is responsible.
That's,
there is
that's
no
deep
adult.
And it's so true. But that sounded like me when we first were dating. We just recently talked about this on an interview. And I talked about so many things that I was dating with my ego. I was dating with my ego and trying to feed myself because I wasn't sure about myself.
Mm-hmm.
And when we started dating, I was expecting Kay to do all these things to make me feel better. And every time she didn't do it, I felt like, oh, she doesn't love me enough.
Right. Meanwhile, we were, you know, 18, 19, 20-year-old kids who talk about knowing
somebody else.
You didn't even know your damn self, you know?
Okay, so I want to leave you with this. And this is... Earlier, I stated that the world, love songs, Disney have told us that someone's going to come into our life and going to meet our needs. But children who did not get their emotional needs met become adolescents who didn't get their emotional needs met, become adults that didn't get their emotional needs met. And I'm here to say that there is no other adult on the planet that has the assignment of meeting any adult's emotional needs. It is the individual's responsibility to meet their emotional needs. Now, your physical needs and, you know, I need your help, honey. And, you know, I need you to hug me. All these things, that's different. But your emotional needs must be met by you. There's no, the parenting is done in your life. If there's some weaknesses or there's some breaking down in your emotional needs, you have to yourself effectively. That's accountability. And then you bring that version of yourself to a relationship. And the relationship will show you the new areas in which you need to heal. That's the purpose of relationships. They're going to mirror for you what you think and believe. And you take responsibility individually for the things that have come up because the relationship is more important.
Wow. You really do a great job of articulating things that you feel.
Yes.
That you don't know how to say.
Well, she's a whole ass therapist. And what? Let me scroll back up to
motivational
the resume.
Speaker.
I definitely feel a whole lot better, and I didn't even know I had a problem coming in here.
I know, Delaina.
Oh,
we appreciate you so much, and we know we have to let you go because your time
is up.
But we thank you so much, and we have to have you back on.
Yeah,
this
and
was,
we hope that people really like
great.
Tune in and listen to some of the advice that you've given
yes.
today. I think it's very sound advice for people who are aware that they do want to exist in a relationship, because there are people who decide that, you know what, relationships aren't for me, and I respect that. At least
yes.
you know you want to be single and mingling for the rest of your life. That's all good. But it's the people who aspire to be in a relationship or who are in relationships that I think will definitely get some really good, valuable information. So thank you again. Thank you for
thank
sitting
you.
With us
thank
and all the best. Okay. So if you'd like to be featured as our listener letter or one of our listener letters, email us at deadassadvice@gmail.com.
That's deadassadvice@gmail.com.
All right. Moment of truth time. I know what mine is.
Moment of truth. Moment of truth, first of all. I want to apologize publicly for screaming at you that day when me and Jackson walked
thank
in the
you.
House.
And I apologize for my frustration and raising my voice because, like you said, sometimes I'm not aware of my tone. But just so the record shows, I spoke to my son immediately after everything happened and we were able to reconcile, and I was able to speak to him about how he felt about everything. And I made sure that he knew that I wasn't coming from a place of a disappointment or a place of being upset, but I was just more so concerned. And me being his mom, I need to hold myself responsible too for putting him in situations where he could be at harm. That being said, my kids are never leaving the house ever again in life. Moment
then
of truth.
Then she go back to mom mode.
Now and nobody's coming over either.
Now can't nobody
come over.
Everybody
want to come over now that we moved, but no. Keep the same energy y'all kept when I lived in Brooklyn for 10 years.
She gonna bubble wrap all the kids.
That being said, I will be bubble wrapping them.
My moment of truth is this. Accountability, of course, starts with yourself. Right? You got to be accountable, and that's fine. But you also have to know when you're in a relationship, when you're trying to help your partner be accountable, that they have past traumas that may affect your message no matter how it's delivered. So it doesn't matter if I'm screaming. It doesn't matter if I'm talking softly. It doesn't matter if I'm being direct. If you have past traumas that's going to affect the way my message is delivered to you, you're always going to feel a way. And listening to Delaina made me realize that that's valid. Like, you are entitled to feel that way. And my message is going to be what it is. And you're going to take it however you want to take it because you brought that with the relationship. So my moment of truth is understanding that your partner is going to receive what it is you're giving to them no matter how you say it. That's called Kadeem
feels
world.
Like you felt that to the core.
I did.
You felt that to the core.
Because I've tried all the approaches and don't none of them work. No matter what I say, how I say it, I always get the neck, the snap, all right. That. So. Okay.
I guess my moment of truth, kind of stemming from yours, is not blaming or allowing the way I was raised or past generational traumas, for example, to dictate how I exist in a space with you now in my relationship, with other relationships that I exist in, because I also too need to hold myself accountable and not place blame on other aspects of my life that may contribute to who I am now. So that being said, making sure that I say, Kadeem, you may have been raised this way or you may have not been encouraged to do this as a child. However, you being a grown woman should know that you owe it to yourself and the other party in this relationship to be accountable, to not always place blame, to be willing to be emotionally malleable, as we've been saying today. So that's part of it. And I still like this little term that Delaina said, if you're on the verge of stepping out, step in.
I like that.
You know, step in, lean into those relationships more.
I like that.
So you can see where there's not necessarily a deficit, but there's a way for you to be accountable. So that's that.
I like that. I appreciate your moment of truth.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
But I feel like you're looking at me funny.
Be sure to find us on social media at Deadass the Podcast.
Y'all know where to find me. Kadeem, I am. And you can find me in my house, too.
Because she's not going nowhere.
Never going nowhere.
I knew that was coming.
And nobody coming either.
I'm going to let the kids out, though. Because they need to breathe. They can't be in here with the two of us all the time.
In the backyard.
I am DeVal, and if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, be sure to rate, review, and subscribe.
Deadass.
Deadass.
Deadass is a production of iHeartMedia Podcast Network and is produced by Denora Pena and Tribble. Follow the podcast on social media at Deadass the Podcast and never miss a thing.
That I feel like it's important to express yourself. You got to put your true self out there. And those classic Crocs, clogs, and sandals let you do that.
That's right. Between the rainbow of colors and the Jibbitz charms, you can create a unique look. And I mean literally, no one else will have shoes exactly like yours.
Hey, you know it doesn't get any more comfortable than the Crocs, clogs, and sandals. They are just the perfect blend of comfort and creativity.
Visit Crocs.com to explore the latest styles and Jibbitz charms.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. It's a simple truth. No matter who you are, mental health challenges can affect you, and how you manage them can make all the difference.
That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that meets them where they are and helps them get through. BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule.
It's flexible, simple to use, and more affordable than in-person therapy. Connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you. Learn more at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. That's a literal pro. And it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having Pink Lady Apple, Berry Lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health-Aid Kombucha today.
It's time to celebrate Black History Month at the Walmart Black and Unlimited Clock. One at Flatiron Plaza in New York City and one at Ovation Hollywood in Los Angeles from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. With giveaways dropping every hour on the hour, it's a perfect time to try, like, and share Black-led products. It's free for everyone, and it's your chance to see how you can level up your daily routine with Black-led products that are creating a new world of choices at Walmart. Trust, you don't want to miss it.